Okay. So you heard, I don't know if everyone knew, but last week, Kyle's Bible was on the podium, and I took it and put it right here. And then later, I put my tea down beside it. And Wednesday, and that's the Bible that he just leaves in sanctuary. So Wednesday, he discovered it was gone. It had disappeared. And so they searched everywhere, could not find it. And I actually had a dream Wednesday night. And in that dream, I saw his Bible on, like, the podium, but it was turned, like, I was standing here, and it was turned upside down. So I was reading it upside down, and there was a name, Danny, really nice handwriting across the top, and I was like, That's a young girl's handwriting. But I couldn't discern who it was. So I kept trying to get closer and read it, but I couldn't. So I knew God was hiding it from me. So the Bible was returned. The person that had taken it had just inadvertently picked it up when they got my tea to bring to me because I'd left it. It looked exactly like her Bible. Even the pages, the edges are silver like hers, which most of them are gold, you know. So, and it was a teenager, one of the youth. So God had a prophetic word concerning that. And this is what he said. I just got a word about the Bible that went missing this week. It was a prophetic act the Lord orchestrated as a sign and a wonder that the younger generation in the house is picking up the word, even if they don't realize it. So this is your assignment. When God releases prophetic words like that, or prophetic words, period, sometimes they need to be carried forward. You know, I think years ago we were always taught, well, if it's God, it'll come to pass. You know, well, the reality is sometimes that God gives us things to encourage us to carry it forth. And one of the major ways that we carry it forth is in intercession. So my assignment for you for the week coming is for you to take that word concerning the youth and carry it forward in intercession. And then I want you to do something. Whenever the Lord prompts you, or, you know, when you're praying and you feel like you're praying and something comes out and you go, oh, I want you to write that down, because God's going to begin to speak to us and what about how to carry those things forward in prayer. So that's the assignment. Do y'all remember the word? Do you want me to repeat it one more time? Okay. I can actually post it on the thing. Is everybody on the, what's it called, Church Center app for the yeah, so I will post it there, but I will read it again. It was a prophetic act the Lord orchestrated as a sign and a wonder that the younger generation in the house is picking up the word, even if they don't realize it. Okay? So, and sometimes we think You know, we're kind of quick to pass judgments on what's going on and, you know, things that happen. But sometimes God orchestrates something. You know, it's in his plan. He wants to show us something, so he orchestrates it. And that's what happened this time. It was really, not even a mistake. It was orchestrated by God, and that's powerful. If you want to draw, you can, anytime you want to draw. So I believe that God is really beginning to just bring those gifts out in the youth. If you were on the Relentless Facebook, Annalisa shared how one of the young girls gave her daughter a prophetic picture that spoke precisely into her life. And that's powerful. That's youth ministering to youth. That's amazing. So anyway, I encourage you to pray for the youth. So one of the things that I felt like, you know, when I get to thinking about prayer and teaching on prayer, intercession, there are so many different facets to it. You can very quickly get overwhelmed with what, Lord, how, when, where, why, you know, how to carry that forth. So I gave you the syllabus, and now, listen, William might plug me to the syllabus, but y'all don't, okay? 'Cause I might get away from it a little bit, but I lost track of what I was going to say. Jeez. I'm editing the tape so I can edit that right out. So I felt like the Lord gave me kind of a guideline to go with. You know, I've heard so many times, I've been in a meeting or in a prayer meeting or a teaching like this or something not even on prayer, and God has taught me so many things through the years concerning prayers that you can carry over into prayers. Doesn't matter. They can be talking about, you know, ministering about marriage or ministering about, I don't know, whatever, and something will come, and it'll just settle in me. Oh, that's for prayer. You know, and then it develops and grows in you, and you become better equipped to pray in certain ways. So this week is about hindrances to effective prayer. And I'm going to talk to you about that a little bit. You know, the scripture tells us, Paul said that we're to pray for those in authority over us. And he said, and I think Kyle has mentioned this a time or two, but he said that we are to pray for all those in authority over us so that we could have peace. And so it's coming up, you know, we have the primaries going on, and you know, there's a lot of things going on in the world, but this country. But one of the things that has really bothered me the most is how we have spent, now I'm not talking about we in here, but I'm talking about collectively as maybe the conservative arm of the nation, how we have spoken against our president. Directly opposite of what God told us to do. And so for that, we need to repent. And we need to come around to God's way of thinking and begin to pray over our president. And that's something, it's sometimes it challenges you. I remember one time I called the White House 1-800 number when President Obama was in office, and I was just, you know, telling them about how I prayed for the president and what I prayed for him, and this real snarky voice said, "Well, thank you." I was like, "Well, I won't pray no more." But God rebuked me, you know, because it's hard, it's difficult, but it doesn't change the things, the circumstances in the natural does not change the heart of God, nor does it change our mandate to pray the way that He desires us to pray. So I don't know why this story came to me, but I'll tell it. I used to have a cleaning business, and some houses I'd go into and I'd just want to turn around and walk out, you know. Some houses, after I cleaned them, I'd go sit in the car and cry and put salve on my aching muscles. But there was this one house that when I went into it, it was spotless. And I said, "Lord, I don't know how to clean this house." And He said, "Clean it like it's the dirtiest one you'll encounter." And that's what I always did. You know, so sometimes it doesn't make sense to us, but if we will listen to God and pray things out, you know, our responsibility isn't to judge, because He didn't come to judge. Our responsibility is to do what He's called us to do, and then trust that all things work together for good. He'll begin to work things around for our good if we trust in that. So, anyway, so these are just some of the things that I pray when I pray for the president or the governor or, I mean, whomever. Whomever in authority. So I pray that He'd have godly wisdom in decision making, and I don't look to see if, you know, He is. I just pray it out. I pray protection for him and his family and for those around him. I pray for favor, especially when he's meeting with foreign dignitaries or foreign leaders. And sometimes when I'm praying, God will, like, deposit something in my spirit, and I'll begin to pray that out in very specific things. And then a few times I've actually, when I heard something on the news, realized why God had me pray that out. So anyway, that's just an encouragement. Prayer is dynamic, and that means powerful. It's kind of like dynamite. You know, it has an explosive power to it, but it has a fuse too. So if the fuse is longer, and God's the one that determines the length of the fuse, it may take a while for that prayer, that dynamic portion of that prayer, to just explode. It carries an authority that you can feel in your spirit. And sometimes, or, you know, when you begin to become really interested in and active in prayer, to start with, you might just pray, like, when I started praying, like, I began to notice when I was reading the prayers, Paul's prayers, I thought one day it was like a light came on, and I said, "He's praying. He's praying for the Corinthians, and he's praying for the Colossians." And it just became a revelation to me. And so I took my Bible, and I would walk around my house like this, And I was so religious, I'd close my eyes, and when I'd hit something, I'd open my eyes. Or, you know, when I couldn't remember exactly what the scripture said, I'd open it and read more. But I began to pray out the scriptures. And so I learned to pray the word that way. But and I want to stress, you know, when you're uncomfortable praying, and I look at some of you, and I know you're not uncomfortable praying, but when you're uncomfortable praying, don't let the enemy back you up, because God has a plan and a purpose for your prayers. And he really wants to grow you into a place where you're not confident in yourself, but confident in who he is in you. And if you lend yourself to him in prayer, then he's going to begin to pray through you in ways that will absolutely astound your mind. And that's one of the things that I pray a lot, is when I begin to pray, sometimes I'll sit down and I'll say, Lord, I'm lending myself to you in prayer. What's on your heart today? And when I pray for a person, I ask God to show me how he sees that person. And then it's very disturbing to me, and I hear it a lot. There was, years ago, there was a young man, he was really rowdy. Daryl and I went to school with him, and he was just a good old boy, and he was rowdy and a little rough around the edges, and just, anyway, after high school, I heard that he had gotten saved, and I was so excited, and then I began to hear, it won't last. It won't last. Yeah, that won't stick. Nah, no, he's too wild. That won't work. And sure enough, it didn't. So you cannot, I'm just, one of the things that I'm saying is, when you pray something, you ask God what's on his heart, and you pray that out for that person, you cannot turn around and look at the circumstances of their life and begin to proclaim that in the atmosphere, because that will render your prayers powerless. And the words that you say have to line up with the prayers that you've prayed. And the prayers that you've prayed have to line up with God's heart and his word. So, y'all know that I like the stories. So, I asked the Lord about the stories this week, and I got a couple for you. This is really neat. So, one of the things that really stood out to me in the past few weeks is the fulfilling of prophecy, dreams, visions, and words, things spoken over relentless, things given to Kyle through prayer and the prophetic word, as well as others, and how those things are now beginning to be made manifest. So one of the things I want to encourage you with is, when you hear a prophetic word that comes through the pulpit, I want you to take that thing and carry it forward in prayer. Just, you know, and I'm going to show you a few things here with the stories. So 1 Kings 17, verse 17 through 24 says, "Go and live in the village of Zarephath, near the city of Sidon. I have instructed a widow there to feed you." This is God talking to Elijah. So Elijah had actually just prayed that it wouldn't rain, and we'll do that story another time, but this is the story for today. So he went to Zarephath, and he arrived at the gates of the village. As he arrived at the gates of the village, he saw a widow gathering sticks, and he asked her, "Would you please bring me a little water in a cup?" Now remember, he has prayed that it would not rain, and it is not raining. They're in drought. As she was going to get it, he called to her, bring me a bite of bread too. But she said, I swear by the Lord your God that I don't have a single piece of bread in my house. I can just see her, what are you talking about? I ain't got no bread in my house, and you want me to bring you a little piece of bread? I only have a little handful of flour left in the jar and a little cooking oil in the bottom of the jug. I was just gathering a few sticks to cook this last meal, and then my son and I will die. But Elijah said to her, don't be afraid. Go ahead and do just what you've said, but make a little bread for me first. Then use what's left to prepare a meal for yourself and your son. For this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. There will always be flour and olive oil left in your containers until the time when the Lord sends rain and the crops grow again. So she did as Elijah said, and she and Elijah and her family continued to eat for many days. There was always enough flour and olive oil left in the containers, just as the Lord had promised through Elijah. You can rely on God's promises. Sometime later, the woman's son became sick. He grew worse and worse, and finally he died. Then she said to Elijah, O man of God, what have you done to me? Have you come here to point out my sins, it's religious spirit talking, and kill my son? But Elijah said, give me your son. And he took the child's body from her and from her arms and carried him up the stairs to the room where he was staying and laid the body on the bed. Then Elijah cried out to the Lord, Lord, O Lord my God, why have you brought tragedy to this widow who has opened her home to me, causing her son to die? What's going on here, God? And he stretched himself out over the child three times and carried and cried out to the Lord, O Lord, my God, please let this child's life return to him. The Lord heard Elijah's prayer, and the life of the child returned, and he revived. Then Elijah brought him down from the upper room and gave him to his mother. Look, he said, your son is alive. Then the woman told Elijah, now I know for sure that you are a man of God and that the Lord truly speaks through you. You know, that's a powerful statement right there. When you lend yourself to prayer, and in those times of prayer, you see dead things begin to come to life, it will witness to the world of the goodness and the glory of God. The that word, Zarephath, let's see where I put it. That word Zarephath means refining or refiner. There was a refining that took place in that story. There was a purpose that God sent Elijah to Zarephath, and it was for the purpose of bringing some silver out, of purification, of that refining process. And I think it was both in Elijah and in the widow, and in her son. So, I'm going to read you another story, and this is a powerful picture of what it means to sit at the foot of a teacher. I have a friend, Danny Stain, and we actually served the ministry that he has for 8 years. Yeah, long time. Anyway, one of the, and I used to edit his CDs and DVDs, and one of the things that he had a CD, and it was called Where Are the Elishas of God? And that, I was like, oh, he meant to say Elijah's. And God said, no, he meant to say Elisha's of God. Listen to this story, 2 Kings 4, 8 through 36. One day, Elisha went to the town of Shunem. A wealthy woman lived there, and she urged him to come to her home for a meal. After that, whenever he passed that way, he would stop there for something to eat. I want to tell you something about this. That woman knew who Elisha was, and she honored the gift in him, or the office in him. She said to her husband, "I'm sure this man of God who stops in from time to time is a holy man of God. Let's build a small room for him on the roof and furnish it with a bed, a table, a chair, and a lamp. Then he will have a place to stay whenever he comes by." One day, Elisha returned to Shunem, and he went up to his upper room to rest. He said to his servant Gehazi, tell the woman from Shunem I want to speak to her." When she appeared, I copied this out of a computer program, so... When she appeared, Elijah asked her, "What is it that we can do for you?" And she replied, "No, my family takes good care of me." Later, Elisha said to Gehazi, "What can we do for her?" And Gehazi replied, "She doesn't have a son, and her husband's an old man." "Call her back again," Elisha told him. And when the woman returned, Elisha said to her, as she stood in the doorway, next year at this time, you will have a son." And she said, "No, my lord. O man of God, don't deceive me and get my hopes up like that." But sure enough, the woman soon became pregnant. And at that time, the following year, she had a son, just as Elisha had said. One day when her child was older, he went out to help his father, who was working with the harvesters. Suddenly he cried out, "My head hurts, my head hurts." His father said to one of the servants, "Carry him home to his mother." So the servant took him home, and his mother held him on her lap. But around noontime, he died. She carried him up and laid him on the bed of the man of God, then shut the door and left him there. She sent a message to her husband, "Send one of the servants and a donkey so that I can hurry to the man of God and come right back." And he said, "Why go today? It's neither a new moon festival nor a Sabbath." But she said, "It will be all right. All is well." So she saddled the donkey and said to the servant, "Hurry, don't slow down unless I tell you to." As she approached the man of God at Mount Carmel, Elisha saw her in the distance. He was watching. He was watchful. It's important to be watchful. He said to Gehazi, "Look, the woman from Shunem is coming. Run out to meet her and ask her, 'Is everything all right with you? Is everything all right with your husband? Is everything all right with your child?'" "Yes," the woman told Gehazi, "all is well." But when she came to the man of God at the mountain, she fell to the ground before him and caught hold of his feet. Gehazi began to push her away, but the man of God said, "Leave her alone. She is deeply troubled, but the Lord has not told me what it is." Then she said, "Did I ask you for a son, my Lord? And didn't I say, 'Don't deceive me and get my hopes up'?" Then Elisha said to Gehazi, "Get ready to travel. Take my staff and go. Don't talk to anyone along the way. Don't allow anything to divert your attention. You keep focused on that journey, and you go do exactly what I tell you to do." He said, "You go, take my staff, and lay it on the child's face." Gehazi hurried on ahead and laid the staff on the child's face, but nothing happened. Okay, the staff represents two things, the word and authority, okay? Nothing happened. Sometimes you speak the word over something and nothing will seem to happen. There was no sign of life, and so he returned to meet Elisha and told him, the child's still dead. Nothing's happened. Didn't see any improvement. Didn't feel a heartbeat, no breath. He's dead. When Elisha arrived, the child was indeed dead, lying there on the prophet's bed. He went in alone and shut the door behind him and prayed to the Lord. Then he lay down on the child's body, placing his mouth on the child's mouth, his eyes on the child's eyes, and his hands on the child's hands. And as he stretched out on him, the child's body began to grow warm. I'll tell you what intercession is. Intercession is being stretched out over something. Whatever it is that God has set before you that looks dead and lifeless, and refusing to give up until you see warmth come in there, but there's more. And he stretched out on him, and the child's body began to grow warm. It's a semblance of life restored. So a lot of times, listen to me, in prayer, we see that semblance of life. We see that body begin to grow warm. And you know what we do? We get up and leave it. And then the breath is taken away. And death comes. So listen to what Elisha did. Elisha got up and walked back and forth across the room once. And then stretched. I think he walked back and forth. I mean, I was like, shandaradianta. I don't know if he prayed in tongues, but I think it was probably more than one time. He was praying, crying out to the Lord, and he came back. And he again stretched himself out on the child. Same way, hand to hand, mouth to mouth. Eyes to eyes, until the child sneezed 7 times and opened his eyes. Then Elisha summoned Gehazi, called the child's mother, he said. And when she came in, Elisha said, here, take your son. I want to tell you, you know what Shunem means? You can get you a little Strong's if you don't have it, or they're online. You can get it online. And sometimes you have to have the King James, so I have the Blue Letter Bible. It works real good for me in my phone, so I look it up all the time because King James is not like the NLT. Thank God. But I have to look it up in the King James and the Blue Letter, but it's got a Strong's there. It's awesome. So Shunem means double rest. So Elisha came to the place of double rest, and in that place, double rest came to a home. 7 means completion, maturity, wholeness. So God wants our prayers to persevere. I talked to you a little bit about perseverance last week, or persistence. He wants us to persist in prayer beyond that place of just feeling the warm body, you know, the semblance of life. He wants us to be persistent until we see that fullness of life. And then even then you carry it forth in prayer. It just depends. But if you tune in to God, He'll help you to know when it's time to move on. So I want you to notice something. The father was harvesting in the field. The child of promise went to the field of harvest. And in the field of harvest, catch this, it's a prophetic thing. In the field of harvest, he came under attack. And it caused him, his life to be taken away from him. Sometimes in the field of harvest or in the field, when we're out in the field, the promise that we've received from God begins to die. And that's when we have to become like Elisha and stretch out on that promise. Years ago, Daryl and I were going to somewhere in Florida. Danny was ministering. And on the way, I had a vision. And what I saw was it was a dark room. And like up in the corner of that room was something on a shelf. And I couldn't see what it was. And it just really puzzled me, you know, like, Lord, why are you showing me this? But I really, there was something on that shelf, and I knew that I needed to know what that something was. So in the vision, I walked into the room and over to the shelf and reached up and took it down, and it was just like a gift, and but it was dusty. Couldn't tell what it was at all. And when I took it down, this is what happened. The Lord went, it's time to blow the dust off of the promises. And that was a word for that church. But what I want to say is that this really struck me about I've heard people preach that he was a young man, but he wasn't. I mean, he sat on his mother's lap until noon and died. Come on, he wasn't a young man. He was a young boy. That, you know, that age where he was just beginning to look around and say, oh, there's Phil. I want to go out there with Daddy and, you know, watch him with the workers and, you know, be a part of the harvest. So he was a young boy. I think that there are a lot of, not just us, but a lot of people that we encounter that have promises from God, and for various different reasons, they've done just like whoever it was that put that gift up in the corner on that shelf. I'm just going to ask you, if you've been around, especially Pentecostal movement for a while, or charismatic, however you want to label that, how many times have you heard, well, if it's from God, it'll come to pass? Not necessarily. The enemy will come to hinder what God has. And that is why it's important. I'm going to tell you, we've talked about dwelling. One of the keys that God has given to us this year is the understanding, the knowledge of the importance. It's an essential thing of dwelling with Him. Dwelling with Him in a place of relationship. So, you know, sometimes it's hard to come to that place where we begin to understand that. You know, what's it mean to dwell with God? What does it mean to be in His presence? What does it mean to communicate with Him? But if you are just obedient and begin to step into that and ask the Lord to lead you in that, show you, grow you in that place of fellowship with Him, He'll do that. But I think that, no, I know that there are so many times when we get a prophetic knowledge or understanding from God about who we are and what He's called us to. And I'm talking about individual, I'm talking about us individually, but I'm also talking about relentless. And I'm talking about our families. I think I said something to you last week about your children. If you have children, you should absolutely know the call on their lives. It's part of what you do as a parent. And then you should absolutely stretch out over those calls and call them into that place of life, fullness. So, I think I lost my track. So, I believe that what one of the major things that I believe God wants to do in our coming together to learn about prayer and to encourage each other to begin to exercise that prayer, I believe that His purpose in that is manifold, but it is so significant for relentless at this time. And it is significant for every one of us individually, and it will carry us through. I want to talk to you about the I want to say this about Elijah and Elisha. There were things that God told Elijah to do that he never did. Do you know that? I'll get the CD for you. But the thing about Elisha is, look at Elijah, and this is just look at the story and get a message. Elijah stretched out on the boy until he came to life, but it was three times. The Elisha stretched out until he felt the warmth. Then he went back and got the whole complete picture, brought him back totally to life before he would leave him. There were things that Elijah was commissioned by God to do that he did not do. But the good news is, Elisha did. He carried it forth. And I'm going to prophesy right now. There are things that God commissioned those who came before us to do, and they did not complete the commission. But God has called us an Elisha company, and we will go forth and complete the mission if we are obedient to take the gift off the shelf and begin to pray over it, pray over ourselves, and carry it forth. Okay? You know, in both instances, a mother was made a promise. And in both cases, God, in spite of circumstances, was faithful to see that promise carried forth. That's something that is so important to do in prayer, is focus on the promise, not the circumstance. And carry, when that circumstance comes to hinder or to make you give up, you know, like, this isn't working, I must not have heard God, I don't know, well, I thought He called, I thought He said this, well, I thought, you have to go back to the promise. And you have to stretch out on that promise and you have to pray it forward until it comes to life. I don't know at the times. I've heard people say, well, I just thought it was God, but it's not been God because it just didn't work out like that. And I always want to say, well, how much prayer did you apply to that? You know, now I'm not saying that you never hear something, you know, there we have filters, you know, we have emotional filters, we have all kinds of filters, you know, people speak things over us and it filters and whatever, you know, we have aspirations and they can be a filter, and sometimes we can think that we've heard God on a matter and actually we've filtered it so it wasn't the voice of God. I'm not saying that everything we hear, let's see, I'm bungling that a little bit. What I'm saying is in relationship, you will become so intimate with the voice of God. When he drops something in your spirit, you will know that that is God. And do not move from that place. Okay? And God wants to open our eyes. One of my favorite stories about praying for Savannah is I used to walk from Emmett Park to the other side of Forsyth. And along that way, I would pray. And I'd walk all the way down to the end of the park, and then Forsyth, and I'd turn around and come back. And there's the Confederate monument, the end of the park. I'm about to tell you something. So I was just walking along praying, and I came up to the monument to, you know, there's a fence around it. And I came up to the monument, and I heard God laugh. I said, what? What, God? And he said, look what I did. And I was like, okay. And he drew my attention up to the statue. And if you go down there and read it, it's from Isaiah. And it says, see, God has a plan. Man thinks he has a plan, but God has a greater plan. So I looked up, and it says, come, O four winds, and blow on these slain here that they may live. And I mean, it hit me, and it just hit me again. God said, I've brought people from all over the world to prophesy over this city that the dead will rise to life again. All the dreams, all the hopes, all the aspirations, all the destiny that I had for this city will again live. A few years ago, it really came to the news. You know, it's became a racial thing. And I had never considered that it was a Confederate monument or anything, but I'm going to tell you something. Man may have one plan, but God has a greater plan. And so I began to pray, God, hear those words. Bring those words to fruition. Cause the destiny of this city to come forth and live again. So, do you want to turn that around? Sure. Yeah. Could you tell us what it is? No, oh, you don't know? Do you need an interpretation for the prophetic art? Okay. So, I think this is a depiction of the young boy and Elisha on the bed. And I think this is the herald of heaven. As Elisha prayed, the angel took the words up to heaven. And God brought life down into the boy and restored him. Okay, and I think also this is like a prayer wall. And we're to be watchmen on the wall. So that's very good.